History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. We've learned they don't have to go untold if we're willing to take a few simple steps before it's too late. Ask some thoughtful questions and invest a little time in listening. You never know just how much your perspective will deepen. Our goal for this first episode of 2025 is the same as it was when I first started interviewing World War II veterans in 2005, to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And isn't it amazing how along the way we're not only educated and entertained, but also inspired by these stories from our greatest generation? I know that'll be the case with the 102-year-old veteran you get to hear from today. A little more than 6 months ago, Gene Kleindl was back in Normandy, 80 years after he came ashore on Utah Beach as a medic with the 90th Infantry Division's 358th Regiment. But as always, we like to start at the beginning.
Well, I grew up in South Dakota amongst a lot of Indians that were down there at that time. From South Dakota, went to a town called Buffalo Center in Iowa. It's where some of the relatives lived. And then when my one sister to my mother moved to Illinois, we ended up in Rockford, Illinois. So we've been there ever since.
You were still in school when you got to Rockford?
Yeah, still in school, yeah.
Do you know, most of us alive today didn't live through the Great Depression. Only people your age went
right
through that. Do you have some memories from that time period that kind of stand out?
Well, we at that time were kind of without funds, so we were on sort of relief, which meant we would go down to a certain area and load up a big basket full of food and cart it home. So that's how we survived it during that time, by the U.S. government donations of all kinds of foodstuffs that we could take back to the house.
Sounds like it taught you not to take anything for granted, huh?
Yeah, that's right, yep.
Do you remember having any big ideas when you were a boy, any hopes and dreams, ambitions? Hey, when I grow up, I'm going to do X, Y, Z, or be this kind of person?
Well, I don't recall dreaming any big dreams. I figured I would eventually get to school, maybe college a little bit, and then get a good job. I worked at J.L. Clark in Rockford, my first big job. Did pretty well there. So good old J.L. Clark could still operate to this very day, and I owe a lot to that big company. Worked there for 35 years.
You came back to it after the war?
Yeah.
And I didn't ask, did you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, there was my brother Cliff was the oldest, and me. And there was my brother Don. He was 4F, so we called him in those days, because he had a mild heart murmur, and the Army wouldn't take him. Then I had a Betty Jane, and then another brother, Leo, and then one sister after that was named Mary Lou, and they lived in California.
So you were number 2 out of 6, huh?
I was the second oldest of 6, yeah.
Well, and if I do the math, I guess you would have been out of high school already when Pearl Harbor happened, huh?
Yeah.
Do you remember anything about that day, December 7th?
Well, I was in a pool hall or a bowling alley. We just finished with our activities there, and then they broadcast it over the radio. It was kind of a shocker that Pearl Harbor was attacked. We figured eventually we would probably be in the military, which turned out to be so. My brother Cliff and I both was in. My brother Don, I said, had 4F. And my younger brother Leo was too young to be in the military at that time.
So did Cliff end up going in before you?
Cliff went in before me. That was mainly the reason why I joined up, was to join up with him. We ended up down in Camp Barkley, Texas. That's where we were to start with. and eventually sent overseas to France.
What division did he end up in?
He was with the 90th, same division I was in, but I went in as a medic. I don't know how that ever happened, but...
Well, I want to hear how that happened.
I don't know how it happened. It's that I got picked up to be a medic, which turned out to be a good deal.
What kind of training did you receive for that?
Basically, what to do was first aid, how to treat somebody who was having troubles with military. I think I also got involved with the dental side of the equation as well, so learned a little bit to start with to being a dental technician.
How did your mother feel about you two boys heading over to Europe?
Well, she followed us very closely. In fact, she wrote a letter every day. We'd get mail, a bunch of mail coming from my mother. Every day she would write a letter. She was very devoted to both my brother and I. And she, of course, missed us and kept pretty close tab as to what was going on from the letters that we would write.
Do you remember what it was like to head overseas?
Riding on those, going across the ocean during those days when the Germans had submarines and kind of a risky deal.
Yeah.
I remember the area where they were, the bunks were, was right in the middle of the ship, right below the water level, which was not the best place to be if a torpedo came flying through there. But we made it through over to England. And we spent quite a bit of time aboard England and got ready for the invasion. And we landed in Normandy. From then on, it was just surviving from day to day because the Germans had a lot of artillery and mortars. They would be flying over amongst the area, but none of us hit us, so that was fine.
But the very nature of your job would bring you face to face with those who did get hit. I'm wondering, just because what you said about your brother Cliff, the fact that you guys ended up in the same division, did you get to see him during your time in Europe?
Yeah. When I came, I met him. At that time, the military would assemble in different groves of trees so they couldn't be detected by the Germans. So I met him in the forest. And to my surprise, I looked all around. There was all kinds of dead cows in that forest as well. I don't know what happened to them. They got hit by artillery, I guess, shrapnel and so on.
Maybe a tree burst or something.
Yeah, a tree burst,
And I guess I've got to ask, too, as we're talking about you and your brother, Kleindl, is that a German name?
It is. Yeah, Klein means small. And you put a DL on there and makes it something a little bit bigger than small.
So how many generations back had your family come to the States?
Well, Oma and Opa, we called them. They came from Germany. They were over here probably quite a few years before that, so they were over here quite a while.
So if you had any relatives on the other side of the war, they would have been distant cousins or something
they
by that point?
Oh, yeah, distant cousins. That's right.
Is that something you thought about? Was that?
Oh, yeah. At that time, we made connections with some of the Germans over there, and some of them knew the family. Of course, they didn't speak any English, so they didn't communicate with us very little. But there was one fellow that we talked a lot over through the mail and so forth. It was of German descent.
So I don't want to assume that I know what it was like to be a medic. I'd love to have you explain to all of us what that entailed, the day-to-day life of a medic in an infantry division. What was that like?
Well, normally everybody would be in a foxhole undercover. Medics had to get out and stay low because somebody would call out, "Medic, you got hit by shrapnel." So we had to climb out of our slit trench or foxhole and keep as low as possible to see if we could give them some first aid, which we did. It was quite a few guys that got hit. There was a lot of mortars that kept flying in there and artillery.
Well, and mortars and artillery don't know who's a medic and who's not. So you're as liable to get hit as anybody else, aren't you?
Yeah, when a shell landed, it would split up in pieces, and that's what you would call shrapnel. You could get hit in a number of spots if you got in the way of one of them. You got in the area where they come popping in there. We had to stay real low to the ground.
And you said something earlier about, you know, once you got over to France, from that point on, it was just surviving day to day. Is there something that stands out in your memory as kind of a welcome to the war moment, or an incident where everything became real for you?
The shrapnel, that was pretty rough stuff, because you could get hit more than one place, you know, if you got, so you had to stay real low to the ground.
And as you described some of that, it kind of sounded like you didn't always know which way to go, that you had lots of guys asking for your help at the same time.
Everybody else was pretty much down to dug in to cover their bodies, a slit dress or a foxhole. Yeah, and we had to get out of ours and crawl over there as far as we could go with the mortars and the shrapnel duels that were flying around. Hopefully, you wouldn't get hit. Some medics got hit and some didn't. I never got hit. We would have our Red Cross on both arms.
Uh-huh.
And the helmet also had the Red Cross on. I remember seeing one helmet in an area just laying on the ground. So I always wondered if his head was in that helmet.
There was debate as to whether wearing that Red Cross would really protect you or not.
Not really. If some guys had a particular dislike for medics, they would make a good target.
Are there some close calls that stand out in your memories?
Like I said, I found one helmet laying there. It had a bullet hole. Had a hole right through it. So apparently somebody had a problem with the medics and used that as a big target. I don't know if there was somebody that was in it or not. I don't know. I always wondered about that.
Well, and you said, you know, survive day to day. I guess one question that may seem obvious is how? How do you do that? How do you keep going when you're dealing with the kind of situations really no one should ever have to deal with?
Well, I suppose you just kind of go with the flow. You pretty much know what's happening, and so you did the best you can. Just kept up every day. You just dug yourself in, whatever you did, whatever you needed to do. That was just the ordinary way to survive, was to stay low, and if you could, get underground as far as you can. The mortars, like I say, when they would hit, they would break into tiny pieces of all shapes and sizes, and you could get hit pretty bad. Get hit by one of them, which I did not, fortunately.
And what about the guys that you're helping? Did it ever get easier to see what was happening to them? Or?
I don't know. I remember one time when I was working on helping some fellow that had been hit. The Germans was throwing in mortars, so I just had to drop him. He was on a litter. We just dropped him and took off for some kind of a hill or a mound of some kind so we could get below where the shrapnel was flying. Then we came back later on. He was still okay, so we picked him up and carried him down into across a railroad track, which was down the hill and up. Quite an effort to get that litter up that hill so we could load it on a jeep.
The life of a medic on the front lines in World War II. Nothing like hearing it firsthand, is there? And there's much more to come with 102-year-old Gene Kleindl when we come back. You'll find some great videos of Gene on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this. Hey, do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for way too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I gotta tell you, when it comes to your money, I think I've found a better way with EECU. Just take a look at myeecu.org and I think you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a not-for-profit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Over 350,000 members now in 12 different California counties and access to more than 30,000 co-op ATMs and free online and mobile banking. What I love most is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. A decade ago, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. By the end of this year, more than 2,000 veterans will have visited their memorials for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement that EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 1-800-538-3328.
proudly presented by Provident Payments. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and an episode recorded at the most recent reunion of the 90th Infantry Division Association. Only three World War II veterans were able to attend that latest gathering of the tough hombres from that historic unit. 102-year-old Gene Kleindl of Rockford, Illinois was one of them. He and his older brother Clifford were both in the 90th. Gene came ashore on Normandy's Utah beach 2 days after D-Day, and he spent the rest of the war in Europe tending to wounded soldiers as a combat medic. When we left off, he had described an incident where incoming fire had forced him to drop a litter carrying an injured GI, but he was able to go back and retrieve him once things quieted down.
You'd get several of the litters on a jeep, and then they would haul it back to the first aid station, whatever battalion. He had aid stations in first battalion, and second, and third, and also back in regimental. So everybody was trying to, once you got them given first aid, then you'd move them back to the rear. And then when we were close to the channel, they would take them back to England, where they ended up. That's where my brother ended up. He was wounded twice. Mm. And the second time, they took him across back over to England, where he was for quite a while. But they would send those guys, some of those guys would, under the strain of artillery and mortars, would just kind of go kind of wild or mad. They'd send them back for R&R, maybe for about 3 days, and some never really could adjust to that constant pounding, but they'd send them right back up in the front lines again. Mm. So I imagine some of them had mental problems after that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that probably wasn't talked about enough at the time, and no, maybe more people understand now.
Yeah, that's right.
How did you deal with it? I mean, these are things that you never asked to be in the middle of.
I don't know. I suppose it's just the situation comes up, and you just take for granted that you got to do what you can to stay alive, and either dig enough dirt to get your body below the surface of the ground, and those mortars would be coming in, and all that shrapnel flying. That's pretty much kept us busy, just digging just enough to get your body under the ground.
Sounds like you had some pretty long days over there.
Oh, yeah, they were long, and you wondered if it was going to ever end, but eventually things changed as time went on.
And you're wearing a hat and a jacket that reflect your attendance in Normandy for the 80th anniversary of D-Day back in June. And we hear a lot about D-Day every year.
Oh, yeah.
What we don't hear about is the weeks and months that followed. And the 90th Infantry Division was doing some heavy lifting during that time. Are there some things that you did or saw during June, July, August that you think we ought to know about?
Your mind just kind of flows with whatever was going on, and you pretty much do what you can to keep alive. Hopefully things would quiet down, which they did eventually. Mm-hmm. The Germans they didn't like the fact that we were over there, so we weren't too popular with them for a long time. And then we went into occupation eventually after a while, and some of the Germans would walk by and just stare at you. You know, wonder, what are you doing over here? I still remember the eyes of some women that looked at me as I walked by and wonder what world would we Americans, what we were doing over there. Mm. But we were trying to help the French best we could.
How about that winter, December 1944 into January, February of 45, the Battle of the Bulge? What kind of conditions did you have to deal with?
Well, I think there was some mountain involved here. We were down in the valley and had set up an aid station down there. And then we would go out and pick up the wounded and bring them back to the down below. But there was a lot of activity going on with the mortars and the artillery by the Germans.
How cold did it get?
It got pretty cold. I think you adjust quickly to that sort of thing, whatever's going on, just kind of a routine. Mm-hmm. Whatever you needed to do, you did.
You're made from some tough stuff, I can tell.
Yeah.
And I don't want to leave out anything that's important to you. The 90th is one of those divisions that carries the name Liberator toward the end of the war, liberating concentration camps like Flossenbürg.
Yeah, what was going on in those camps wasn't too pleasant, that's for sure.
Could you even believe it? Did it defy the imagination?
Oh, yeah. War is a funny thing. It's kind of a cruel thing. It takes you a while to get adjusted to the thought that they're out trying to kill you and so forth. You make those adjustments and continue to do what you're told to do, and that was it.
This may sound like a dumb question, but were you ever scared over there? Were there things that frightened you?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think we were frightened a lot of times. Hard to explain what war is. It's one side trying to kill the other side. There's no compassion involved in that sort of thing, but it's just the way it is.
Was there anything that brought you comfort or encouragement in those times?
I don't know. We would write letters home when we could. And my mother, she had a little idea of what was going on, but both her sons were in combat and so on. It was tough on her, I know, for a long time. She couldn't quite get over the fact that we were both survivors and we were coming home eventually.
Yeah. I bet you still remember what that was like to come home.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I kind of remember sitting around in the living room. And, of course, there was a lot of cussing and swearing going on. I can't figure out why, but the F word flew out of my mouth once. And I said, just yesterday, I was laying in bed thinking about what a surprise or bad surprise that had become to their ears.
Your mother wasn't too happy about that?
Well, I wasn't either. I didn't mean to. But that word was a big word in the military. Everybody was doing this and that, swearing. A lot of cussing going on.
So you had to retrain your brain a little bit to adjust?
Oh, yeah. Sure, yeah.
I know it's not easy to talk about if there is something here, but did you lose some guys over there that you would come to know or appreciate?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember one fella. We slept together in a sled trench one night, and the next day he got hit by mortar shell. And died. I still remember when I was over to France, I saw his tombstone. And stood there for a moment thinking about how he got hit the night before.
Ralph Geddes, is that it?
Ralph Geddes. Uh-huh. Yeah, they do a great job with the dead in France. The graves and the cemeteries show great respect for those who passed away or got killed during that time. There was a lot of them, row after row after row.
And is Ralph someone you had known for a while?
Well, for a short time, I remember. Like I said, I slept in the same slit trench with him one night, and the next day it was bad news. Yep.
What was he doing when he got hit?
Well, probably he was exposed to. He was out in the open somewhat with shrapnel. When it hits, it breaks into pieces and it goes flying.
Yeah.
So.
Did I understand correctly that he was doing something that you might have been doing otherwise?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
When you were in France this past year, you got to go see his marker?
I went out to the cemetery. I was amazed at, as I said, the reverence the French gave to those who were killed during World War II. Their tombstones and the grass was mowed and cut, and that was a big surprise to me to see how well attended the crosses. Lots of crosses. It's amazing how many Americans got killed over there in France. some of them families back in the States said they would welcome me if you send the body back to the U.S., but the majority of them, I think, stayed right in France where they were killed and so forth.
Did you ever have to wrestle with the thought that you might be next, that this could happen to you?
Well, I suppose that thought, no doubt, is constantly with you, because a lot of times you have to very quickly hit the ground and try to get under cover when the shelling would come flying in. So, yes, I'm pretty sure I felt the same way. I was a little bit concerned about my brother as well. Like I say, he was wounded twice, and he was sent home, and I was thought that would be great. He's back home in the U.S. My mother was so happy. Next thing I knew, they'd sent him back up again. I met him in the woods. That's where they kind of used as a concealment from the German Air Force. Mm-hmm. Would be in little patches of woods and so forth. That's where I saw him, and I shook his hand. He always shook hands very slight. I said, "Don't you?" And she got glad. Just I said, "Squeeze my hand." I'm glad to see him. I didn't think he was just about to squeeze him so lightly. I didn't think he particularly cared whether she shook my hand or not. So I got him to do that, which would be a better way of meeting one another. If you're glad to see each other, still plugging away.
And Gene Kleindl is still plugging away at age 102 in Rockford, Illinois. It's time for our final break, but when we come back, perspective from someone who accompanied Gene in Normandy for the 80th anniversary of the invasion, and someone else who wouldn't be here if Gene hadn't made it home from 311 days in combat in World War II. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. When prices start going up, we all look for ways to save. So here's a simple message for you. Look no further than EECU. Did you know you can finance your mortgage through EECU? How about a home equity line of credit? EECU makes HELOC loans easy, and when the car business is all over the map, the auto loan rates are as steady as can be. EECU is a not-for-profit credit union, not a bank, so the members always win. Go to myeecu.org to become a member today or call 1-800-538-3328. When times get tough and budgets get tight, a lot of businesses start slashing their marketing budgets, which all too often turns into a costly mistake. Instead, what if you could customize that investment to zero in on your target audience with surgical precision? And why am I saying what if? Because I already know you can with Search Strategy Marketing. It's not about how much you spend, it's about the strategy behind it. And Search Strategy Marketing is ready to prove it to you with a free, no-obligation assessment of your current efforts. Learn how to outrank your competition with a free, customized action plan just for Hometown Heroes listeners. Just go to hometownheroesradio.com and click on that light bulb logo for Search Strategy Marketing. It doesn't matter what your business is, Search Strategy Marketing can lead you to the best way to connect with your customers. So look for that light bulb logo today at hometownheroesradio.com and plug into the power that can take your business to the next level.
Honoring veterans from sea to shining sea, you're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, hearing the World War II memories today of 102-year-old Gene Kleindl of Rockford, Illinois. This was recorded at the 90th Infantry Division Association reunion in Fort Worth, Texas, where also on hand was Carl Nuccio, who had quite an adventure with Gene last June. You can find some links on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or at hometownheroesradio.com. Gene's trip for the 80th anniversary of the Normandy invasion included a presentation from the President of the United States, but he also interacted with some young people who will never never forget the experience. Let's let Carl Nuccio clue us in.
I work with a veterans group back home called Vets Roll. Uh-huh. They do bus trips to D.C. every with honor flights and or honor. It's like an honor flight, but only on buses.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I do a lot with that organization, and we took Gene to Normandy last year as part of a Bridge to History tour, bringing four young Gen Zs with. Hired a historian and a production crew, and we videotaped the whole thing, and hopefully going to be bringing that into high schools and teaching what these guys have done, the Greatest Generation has done for the world.
Awesome.
So we got the chance to be on spots Gene was 80 years ago. So we put Gene on the battlefields he was 80 years ago and in the little towns he liberated, and watching the people from France come out and just in tears hug him and thank him. And he's been over there several times, but he had never been to a lot of the battlefields, including where he was, where his brother was wounded. I don't know if he talked about Clifford.
Mm-hmm.
We took him to the field where Clifford was wounded, and he described how he was a medic trying to get to his brother. And he was evacuated 20 minutes before he got there back to England. Clifford lived through the war and so forth, thank God. But so Hill 122 was in July of 1944, where he landed on June 8th on Utah Beach. And the 90th saw their first combat probably June 12th in Peekaville. And then as they moved through Normandy, and he describes the hedgerows, as he talks about the hedgerows, and he could hear the Germans on the other side of the hedgerow. And, you know, talking to him, we take him to Hill 122, which the average life expectancy of a replacement soldier in that battle was one day.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was a medic. We took him to where his aid station was. In that battle, 7,000 casualties in 7 days. And as a 19, 20-year-old medic, he was talking to us and showing us where they stacked the bodies and telling us stories. It's just, you can't imagine what a 19, 20-year-old kid did there. And so if you look up that battle with the 90th Infantry, I mean, the leadership was being chewed up in that division. I don't know if you know much about the 90th. So it was all privates and corporals and, you know, people with no leadership leading the division. So, and Gene will tell you that life was cheap. And so as a medic, seeing all that, and then as he progressed through France, through the Siegfried Line and through Metz, they saw more heavy combat. And then liberating the Flossenbürg Jewish concentration camp. And he did this all before his 22nd birthday. And you think about guys like that. And so the 90th, I mean, people in France, in that part of France, these guys are revered. I mean, you go to towns, they got monuments to the 90th Infantry and so forth.
Well, tell me about the documentary. What's the timeline on that? And what's the goal with that project?
I'm not sure. Production crews are on a little bit of delays. They're behind. So I was hoping to have it out by now. But the goal was, I had this idea 5-6 years ago when I took my kids. They wanted to go to some bougie vacation. And I'd never been to Europe. And they wanted to go to some bougie vacation. They wanted to go to Paris as well. If we go to Paris, we're going to Normandy. And so I took my kids to the 74th, my daughters, to the 74th anniversary of D-Day. And they were probably freshmen, sixth grade type, my two daughters. And it changed their life. I mean, I'm like, wow. And so I had this idea in my head that just because I have the means to take my kids there, every kid in America should understand what we saw and how the French and standing on Omaha Beach and walking in that cemetery. Because when you look at, we say thank you for your service all the time to all these guys here, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you realize who's under those crosses over there in Normandy, thank you for your service and the age of the individual under those crosses and Stars of David, it has a whole new meaning for me, and it did for my girls. And so I had this idea, like, what if we would bring World War II vet or two back with, you know, even if we bring four gems, document it, hire a historian to put us in those places to take us around and show us. So I knew when I'd been there a couple times since then. And I'd met some people, some guides, really world-renowned guide. And I talked to my friend Mark Finnegan, who runs that Vets Roll organization. And with his database and his connections with fundraising, I pitched it to his board. They loved the idea. So we raised approximately $100,000 in about 3 weeks.
Wow.
And the whole trip was funded. We got four Gen Zs over there. We spent 10 days retracing Gene's steps. And we had another Pacific, World War II from the Pacific, joining us as well. And then we met up with a French gentleman who's still alive at 106.
Whew.
And still plays golf and has a 60-year-old girlfriend, believe it or
not.
And, you know, this guy's hysterical. He was he carried the torch in the Olympics for Paris this year. So, and he still wears the hat that we brought him, a World War II veteran, because they don't celebrate their veterans in France the way we do here. So it was a great trip. And so hopefully we can get the goal to your question is to take this and to have some of these young Gen Zs that want to go in and be ambassadors for their generation and to go into the schools and talk about their experience and what they found over there and why not just World War II as a chapter in American history you study in school, but specifically why these people and these individuals are part of the greatest generation this world's ever seen. Not just them, but the Rosie the Riveters as well. We've got a lot of Rosies back home. Mm-hmm. And they work the factories, and I mean that generation is just cannot be duplicated.
And I've just got to ask, and when you have the documentary ready, let me know. I'd be happy to publicize it as much as I can.
Absolutely.
What did you observe in those four young people that went along with the veterans? What was the difference you saw in them after the experience compared to before?
You know, it's kind of interesting you asked that because a lot of people haven't asked that question, and we interviewed them before. And one, we saw this in all of them, but one young man in particular we went to in Belgium. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Malmedy massacre. Okay, we took them to Malmedy, and our guide had the service area pictures. We were at that memorial there in Malmedy, Belgium, and you could see tears in his eyes. And he looked at that picture, and he goes, "That could be me." And that was the takeaway. Like, these guys might be frail old men now, but they once looked just like these they were 19-year-old kids. And then when we drove to the Honor Chapelle Cemetery and we went to visit the graves and put the service era pictures next to the graves, was it just like you could just see the connections with all these young kids. Like, that could have been my – we had two women, two girls, and two boys. And you could say that could have been my brother. That could be my boyfriend, you know. That could be my cousin, you could just see the connections. And we also went, I don't know if you're familiar with the Worth Massacre. It's the only monument in all of Europe dedicated to African-American service. And the 333rd Field Artillery Battalion they were legendary, and they don't get the recognition. And we took them to Worth, and we took their service era pictures, and we visited their graves. You know, and it was just, you could just see. So that's a great question. Not a lot of people have asked me that question. I don't think anyone's asked me that. And you could just see the difference at the end. And when we came back, their level of volunteering, they're out there actively trying to serve veterans of all eras, which is, that's what you want, because you want modern day veteran to get the same recognition because they're putting the same, they're young. People come back from Afghanistan, Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So. That was a great question. Thank you for that.
Thanks to Carl Nuccio. And do check out some of those links online. But let's get back to Gene Kleindl now. When you were back in France most recently, how did they treat you over there?
The French, in my estimation, really appreciated what the Americans was trying to do by sending all of us guys over there. To this very day there, they show their friendship and being very thankful that we did come over there to help and go through the things that we did go. Yeah, they appreciate it very much.
I don't want to wear you out, but I also don't want to leave out anything that's important to you. So if there's something else that I didn't ask you about that you think we ought to know, feel free to share. And I want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for giving us a little taste of what you went through all those years ago.
Yeah, it's a long time ago, and yet your memories go back right at that time. You could still feel the same way later on. But the French of the people that I met when I went over there later really felt and really appreciated the help that we did come over there to help them with. So I'm sure they still do.
And what keeps you going at 102 years old?
My heart keeps on a-beating, I guess. Yeah.
When you think back, when you look in the rearview mirror at 102 plus years, is there something you would say you're most thankful for or most proud of?
I don't know. I suppose the fact that President Roosevelt was very eager to help Mr. Churchill as much as possible. No doubt that it had to be done, or else England would have probably gone under their jurisdiction.
And I got a crazy question for you.
Yeah.
Is there anything you haven't done in 102 and a half years that you still have on your list that you're still hoping to accomplish or experience?
Well, I don't think. At the moment, I don't think of it. If I did it, it's gone. The memories have gone. Gone bye-bye.
Why was it important for you to be here for the 90th Infantry Division reunion?
Well, it's even though it's been a long time ago, and memories fade, and sometimes certain things come to your mind when you're sitting there watching TV, and your mind flickers back to some of the events that went on during those times. You never really dismiss them. Think about it for a little bit, and then you forget about it. And go on to the next thing. But there are a lot of things I still come to my mind and ponder a little while, and I kind of let it go by. So yeah, I think you never forget.
And are you proud of what you did?
Well, yeah, it's past history, and everything that worked out to my advantage. I came back alive and did the usual routine of finding some of the gal to get in love with and get married and have a family. And all that happened, and so little by little, all those other things kind of fade away, except when you go over there and begin to walk amongst the tombstones and so forth and see the huge number of crosses that the French give great honor to. I've always been amazed by the respect that they have shown to the Americans that lost their lives during that time. Mm-hmm. The well-kept cemeteries, and as they say, and ceremonies that they have, they still maintain those ceremonies and of us who are able to hear their words of remembrance. We are grateful that they haven't forgot the people that lost their lives over there because of Adolf Hitler himself.
Well, and your being willing to share a few memories with us helps other people understand, right, and helps us not forget. So thank you for being willing to do that.
Okay, sure.
Is there anything else I didn't ask you that you think we ought to know?
I guess not, other than the fact that the French still respect, and even in small towns, they get together, have ceremonies that indicate that they still have not gotten over the memories of what took place during World War II in their town, in their area. You know, it's amazing that over here it's a little bit different. You know, nothing happened over here particularly, but over there they seen the action of the activities and what went on and all that sort of thing. It's more real to them than it is to us. Mm. We don't give it the attention that it should have, but the French do.
They know that freedom isn't free, huh?
Yeah. You know what? That's right.
Well, thank you very much, sir.
Okay.
You think we ought to get your granddaughter's perspective, too?
Yeah, do that. You want to say something about your old granddad? I live with my granddaughter, by the way. You live with me, don't you? Yeah, she's always been very special. And any activities that go on over there, as far as the past, she's always willing to help me to participate. That is a big help, and it helps to kind of make your memories kind of slowly fade a little bit farther away. He's heard a lot of my stories.
Gene's granddaughter, Jessica Smith.
I love seeing you go over to France, and the very first time we went over there to actually see how everything was now, because I know you went over once with Grandma before that. Just seeing you light up and seeing everything how it is now for the first time was just enough for me, you know, seeing your smile and seeing how happy you were. So it was great to see that, and I got to travel and I got to see things and we got to go on an adventure. So it was nice for me to go, and I enjoy doing that stuff with him. So, I mean, I spent a lot of my life growing up with him, so he's basically my dad, so I don't look at him any different. I'm happy to be here helping him out.
When you were over in Normandy with him, were you imagining him as that 22, 23-year-old medic?
I mean, we went to reenactments here a lot growing up, so I've already done a lot of that, but getting to actually see like the land and all that over there was nice, and getting perspective from the people. I've cried with him He makes so many women cry over there, this one. He gets lots of kisses, and then he makes them cry is what he does over there.
Both cheeks.
Both cheeks, yes. Lots of kisses. And once they know he loves the kisses, he gets even more kisses. So it's amazing. They treat him like a rock star over there, and they celebrate their lives over there. But just sitting around and hearing the stories, like they hand down the stories like through their kids and generations. So, and you can tell that they feel it. It's not like, oh, yeah, my dad went through that or my grandpa went through that. Like when I tell my kids like about him, like mine are still kind of young. But when like I go over like, okay, this is what me and grandpa are going to go do. When they start asking, I explain, you know. And they're just starting to get a little bit of it. But we went to the World War II reenactment in Rockford. So they finally got to see some of it this year. And they thought it was really cool, you know. So right now it's like cool stuff.
Uh-huh.
But I think once they realized like stuff he had to go through, you know, they got a little quiet but then distracted. They don't get like they do in France. We went to
school in France.
Yeah. Yep, and all the kids over there know the history. And they feel it. They get emotional and they feel it.
Speaking of getting emotional, I think I observed that his story about his friend Ralph tugs on your heartstrings a little bit.
Yes.
Can you shed a little light on that?
So I only know so much of it. He's told me it a couple times before France, and then we went to France, and then when we were at the grave, I think he gets just a little emotional when he goes over it. So it's like, I don't know what he's willing to share, what he remembers. I know it's been this last time he couldn't remember as much, but when he was younger and when he first told me the story, it sounded more like they were together and either they were swapping shifts or they had a deal like, okay, hey, you go take care of it tonight and I'll get it later. That was what he first told me. He's like, he went and he didn't come back. He was real quiet and he just didn't talk about it for a while after that, and I kind of took that as that was rough. So later on, when our friend Vincent from France wanted us to come over and asked if there was any graves we'd like to, I asked Grandpa, I was like, well, what about Ralph? And he's like, yeah, let's look at Ralph's. And then he saw it, and I think it was good for him. I think it was good for him. Because since then, he's talked about the story over and over, and it got a little easier. And I think him maybe forgetting details is part of the process, and I think it's helped him to see it and to go over it. But, I mean, you never know. He was still older. It's not like when I say when I was younger. He was still, you know, you got to take it to 85, you know. He remembers what he can, and he gave me what he could. So I relay as much as I can with what I got. But, yeah, when we're there, it definitely takes a whole nother toll because they let you do the flowers and the flag and the sand. And when he shares it with a group that gets emotional, that's when he finally starts to feel it. Because I think a lot of that gets numbed down. Like, it's just words. He's just saying it. In interviews like this, he gets asked a lot of stuff. And he can say it and then repeat it. And then I think when we get home from trips, it's good for him just to kind of, for a minute, you know. Like when we get back from France, he's ready to party, and then he gets home and then kind of takes a minute and it slows down again, and we're at the house for a minute and it kind of comes over. But it's really good for him. Like after we first went over there, he had never opened up and talked so much about the past until he realized how thankful and how it was celebrated. So I noticed that hugely, because growing up, he didn't really, like, he talked about it to my brother, you know, guy to guy, military stuff, me less, but I was still around a lot. And now that I'm older and doing more with him, I think he started to tell me more. But then France, the first time for D-Day, a lot. And it's healthy, and it's good for him.
And I'm just curious for you, when you're there at a cemetery in France, looking at the grave of a guy that, I mean, that could have been your grandpa, right? What's that do for your own perspective?
Well, I'm grateful, because honestly, I don't know where I would be, because, you know, I've been with him for so long, so there's a lot of emotions there. Like, we go to different towns over there, and, like, not just the grave. Like there's people coming up to him, like, this last time we had... That's the one that got me. I think it was after the cemetery. We went to one town where there was a girl with him that... She tried coming up to him three different times, and she couldn't do it. And she finally, third time, I think her dad came with her. Like, she was, like, my age. Like, grown, not a child or anything. But she came to him in broken English. I just want to thank you and maybe get a picture with you. And he was like, don't cry. It's okay. Because she, you could tell. And she just let it go. And he hugged her. And I took a picture of it. And in the picture, you could tell he's holding her. And I heard him say to her, it'll be okay. And it was like, sorry, it was the same words like he used to tell me as a kid. So I was just like, you know, I don't know. They're just so humble, you know, all the vets that are over there. They just don't understand. Like, he'll say thank you all day. And then I'm the one in the room later trying to explain what happened and why everybody's so thankful to him. So I'm like, well, because you did a good job, buddy. So you did a really good job. And he's like, oh, I just did what I was told. Well, you did it without fighting back, and you risked your life, so that counts for something. All right, get me out of here. Thank you. Sorry.
Anything else you want to say about him and why he's special to you, why you're proud of him?
Oh, boy. Well, he kept me on my toes when I was younger and kept me from being raised probably not in the best situations. So now I'm trying to keep him from getting into trouble himself. How's that? Did I word that right?
Right.
Thanks to Jessica Smith and her resilient grandfather, Gene Kleindl, 102 years old. You can connect to more information online at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. Thank you so much for listening today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.